Blog Talk Radio.
Are now tuned in to the mother greatest.
All right. Yeah.
Yes. Welcome to Let's Chat, y'all. I'm Miss Lisa. You know I got my right hand, and most of the time she is my left, the fabulous Miss Tony. Hey, T.
Hey, Lisa girl. It is Thursday.
I know, right? Happy Thursday,
it has
y'all.
Come back
Happy
around.
Thursday.
I know. It has come back around, guys. I know, Leash. It just seems to be coming here quicker and quicker. I don't know about you, girl, but I feel like we're on a roller coaster.
Child, you and me both. I'm excited, though. I can't wait for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. And then in the weekend, Leash, you try to cram everything into it, and before you know it, Monday done snuck back up on us.
Girl, I know. I be trying to be friends with Monday, but I don't know. Monday be acting all fake and stuff. I don't know if I can be cool with Monday. I be trying to be cool with Monday, but no.
No, I am not Monday's friend. She's a flat leaver. She could just leave me right on alone.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, man, but it's good. It's all good. You know, Leash and I, we be having so much to do in addition to our show every week. We have so many projects that we're involved in, and we're always trying to make the show bigger and better for you guys. But it's always something going on. No grass grows under our feet.
Yes. I'm always doing something. T is always doing something. It's a few things I need to get together so I can get actually my 2020 kicked off in 2019. I know everybody was like, it ain't even 2020 yet, but you know, you should really already be in 2021. Really right now I'm running late. You know what I'm saying? But I need to get some things done right now to have 2020 already set up and in place. And so that's what I'm working on now. I have a project and just doing what I do. I got a few other things that's going to be coming up, so I'm really excited about those things and new ventures, and I'm just excited. I got a lot that's going to be going popping off in 2019, so I'm excited about that.
Absolutely. You know, guys, the weather is starting to get warmer, so y'all better make sure to look out for the ladies in Let's Chat. We're going to have a few things that we're involved in. So keep your cyber eyes peeled. And make sure you guys are following us. Lisa and I, our individual pages, as well as our Let's Chat. You know, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, across all social media outlets.
Absolutely, absolutely. We got a great show tonight, a great show. I've been waiting patiently because he has so much going on. I always say this every time we have him on the show. Author Seth Ferranti, let me tell y'all, when he was in jail, not so long before he came home, I did a blog interview on my blog with him. And when he came home, I was able to get an interview with him. I'm so proud of him, not just the progress that he made while he was behind the wall, getting his degrees and just getting himself together and preparing for the things that he wanted to do. But I'm just really proud of the moves he's made outside since he's been home. And I know that the transition was a little rocky when he first got home. It took a lot to get used to. But, honey, he did it. He did it. So he was supposed to be on our Second Chances show that we had earlier this year. But he had other things, and he was out of the country. So he had things, prior engagements that prevented him from doing that. So we're going to do like a little different type of show today. It's going to be a little bit of a combination. We're going to talk about new chances and better life. That's the title of today's show. We're going to talk a little bit about mass incarceration. We're going to talk about reform for mass incarceration. But he is an author. He's an actor. He's a director. So we're going to be talking about movies that he has coming out. We're going to talk about the White Boy Rick documentary. So I'm excited because he has a lot going on and he has a lot to say. He is a journalist. Mm-hmm. He is an author. And he is phenomenal, just phenomenal.
He really is. And I remember our show that he wasn't able to come on. Make sure you guys check that show out on our archives because that was a great show. And everyone on that panel brought something special and unique to the show that evening. But Seth is a friend to the show. And like you said, Lise, he always has something going on. And he is definitely, he's not just a friend, he is a family of the show. So it's always exciting when we get to spend a little bit of time with him because we know his time is precious and we so appreciate him giving us whatever he's able to give us.
I definitely agree. So we are waiting for him to pull into the chat room. We're going to take a brief break.
Okay.
We want to send prayers out to Xavier Lewis. He had, you know, everything is okay, but he did have a car accident. So we just want to send some prayers out to him. Glad that everything is well with him and he wasn't hurt. We also want to send Sarah Gilliard. I want to send her a hug all the way to California. She had a surgery done, and you know, she's always, she's a PR rep, but she's always allowed me to have access to her clients, and I appreciate her for that. So I just want to send her hugs and get well wishes. We appreciate her here on the show. We're going to take a brief break, and then we will be right back.
Okay.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street, part of the street. I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street, part of the street. I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street, part of the street. I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street, part of the street. It's twisted again, live from the pen. Warning these niggas, I'm after they chin. I'm making hits from the fed. Hold out your arm, be calm while I pack the syringe. I am the streets. I represent for the ones that be having that blow in their pot. I am a brick of that 81 Yola before bacon sold. I blow up the spot. Who harder than me? I bet he faking. Miniature twisted, he just a replacement. I'm still a fool with the tool. You should be cool, cause murder was one of my cases. I'm on appeal. No, not appeal, dummy. I just said I'm on appeal. And if it go right for me, I see some lightning. Before 2020, I'm off of this deal. I'm tired of the fear. I got some homies that I know are strong, but they died in the fair. I know some niggas that lost all their bitches, and now they with Jody dividing his bread. I can attest, I took a blow, and that's the reason ain't no heart in my chest. But I kept a couple of thousand in my pocket to keep it a thousand. It's smart to invest, and I be on the burner, be checking my pay. Fuck the CEO, he won't catch me today. He know it's real when he look in my face. I got a swag in my khakis and gray, and I never complain. I don't do drugs and nothing, the dead and the numb of my pain. I ate a 30 and hell yeah, it hurt it, but I made a choice and it came with the game. I am the truth, I'm in the cell recording. My nigga, I'm not in the booth. But you wouldn't know by the way that I flow out this gutter shit. You think I'm missing my tooth. Keep it a buck, mix me with that. Why ain't my street niggas hitting my app? Why am I hustling when I'm at the door? It show that you never did nothing for black. But I got a heart for the streets. I need a play to get back and then start in the streets. If I catch you slipping, I'll hide the club. I'm up on your ass like barking a tree. And you know what to do. Keep it 100. Pull out the cabbage, my nigga, and punt it. Or you can reject it, but you gon' accept it. I'm taking this here, cause I want it, so run it. Heart of the street. I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
I told you before I was born for the dope. Gun on your hoe like I come for the dope. I ain't playing, I promise that I am the GOAT. And you paid for this quote, so it's murder you wrote. Half of these street niggas, cookies and cream. Can't go a day without loud and the lean. They'll trick on the cheek if she fit in the jeans. While they partners in prison, surviving on fiends. That ain't for me, I get mine out the mud. Plant me in concrete and I still a bud. I am a hustler, if ever it was. Threw up the H right in front of the judge. Left out of court and went back to my cell. Tucking my chin, never tucking my tail. Visited D, told her this ain't goodbye, but it is, see you later. Just keep me with mail. When they say I went broke since I've been in the fed, they making that up and just running their head. If anything move on the yard, I got a part regardless of they breaking bread. Family, nigga, Texas on mine. Shout out to Funky for pushing them lines. Both of these niggas is amateurs. All of these calendars here in the city still mine. I am the funk. Ask your big homies how many niggas I made lying in trunk. And when I left the streets, I just changed up the venue. Cause now it continues, they line, they bunk. It's part of the game and we all got a choice. I got no regrets, you can hear my voice. Most of these niggas is called. Fans get involved and they get to rolling like Royce. Back to the street like they didn't do it. Niggas embrace them like they never knew it. These bras no different cause they don't rebuke it. This nigga's a rat and you bitches are stupid. No discipline, they don't live by the code. That's why so many of these suckers told. I wish on you love, you won't get a hug. You left my little boy in the cold. But I'm finna go and these fuck niggas know when my feet get the flow and I'm fixing the flow. Now I'm your bro or whatever I need. Like money, whatever, you got me for show. But just by the record and that'd be good. Supporting this music I got for the hood. I took some time out and bought me some sense. Now I'm just waiting to walk out the fence. I'm the heart of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
I am the one that they missing, my nigga. I'm part of the street.
Part of the street.
Part of the street. Part of the street. Part of the street. Part of the street.
Running up the check, running up the check, yeah, yeah. Stepping on they neck, stepping on they neck, yeah, yeah. Haters popping off, I don't feel a threat, yeah, yeah. Better come correct, gotta get respect. I was born for this, I will go to war for this. I throw every feeling possible right out the door for this. I'm a savage, 21 savage, Captain Nick, no Afro pick. Taking over, no apologies, I'm killing all this shit.
I told you I'm a savage, but you wouldn't listen. Uh-huh. I came to take over the whole game, that's my mission. Karis Jordan, motherfucker, now pay attention. Now that I got your attention, let me complete my sentence. Born in the slums, I hustle for crumbs, I saw for days. Now it's time to get paid, dug into my last day. Right. Streets made me a menace, mama didn't raise no fool. Bottom line, your course was mine, homie, I eat your food. I ain't with that mumble shit, the only thing that mumbles quick is when I put that muzzle on that bitch and I squeeze that shit. Yeah, I'm in. Same nigga, crazy and I'm cool, cold. Split personality, I don't know who's who. Screws loose, so watch what you say to me. I will snap out, I'm a New York Jersey nigga. But now I wanna run the south. It's not where you from, that's nigga right. It's where the fuck you at. So I switch that NY and flip it to a brave cat.
Running up the check, running up the check, yeah, yeah. Stepping on they neck, stepping on they neck, yeah, yeah. Haters popping off, I don't feel a threat, yeah, yeah. Better come correct, gotta get respect. I was born for this, I will go to war for this. If you standing in my way, you gon' be on the floor for this. I'm a savage, 21 savage, a grenade without a pen. Taking over, no apologies, I'm killing all this shit.
First off, you don't know who you fucking with. That nigga KJ here bust quick. Better watch what you say when you run your lips. He's crazy in the range, you don't give a shit. Pop pills, that boy is so ill. Disrespecting, you get killed. Spitting like the Viper, the DC sniper to the bitches, I wear sleep hype, yeah. You don't want it with the kid from Jersey. Better pray to the Lord for some mercy. Cause when I come with fire. Stop putting on your rap, you liar. You ain't never do a bit, you a bitch, nigga. You be lying in your rap, you ain't rich, nigga. You don't want no war with the kid, nigga. I run up in your motherfucking crib, nigga. I kill you, and leave no witnesses. And write a book about it, like OJ Simpson did. I'm a savage, nigga. I am out of my mind. I'll hunt you down if you got. my time. And if you disrespect the king, you know you cross the line. I see you haters, nigga. I hear you haters talking. You gonna end up 6 feet deep in the fucking coffin. I'm about my paper, I'm about my thriller, I'm counting figures. I seen a cross in your eyes, that's why you switch, nigga. Oh, you a bitch, nigga. I'm counting chips, nigga. You keep on chasing ass, I'm getting rich, nigga.
Running up the check, running up the check. Stepping on their neck, stepping on their neck. Haters popping off, I don't feel a threat. Better come correct, gotta get respect. I was born for this, I will go to war for this. I throw every feeling possible right out the door for this. I'm a savage, 21 savage, Captain Nick, no Afro pick. Taking over, no apologies, I'm killing all this here. Hey!
We are back. Welcome to Let's Chat. I'm Miss Felicia. You know I got my right hand, and most of the time she is my left, the fabulous Miss Tony. Honey, we have the fabulous. Fabulous. I call him fabulous because, y'all, he is dope. He is so dope, and I appreciate every time he comes in here. He is an author. He is an actor. He is a director. He is an activist. He is a journalist, and he is gracing us with his presence here today on Let's Chat. We want to welcome author, publisher Seth Ferranti. Welcome, Seth.
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing? Great to be on the show again.
We are good. We are happy to have you tonight.
Yep. You know, I'm always coming on your show. You guys didn't support me since I was inside, so, you know, I always got to respect that.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Yes. Now, you've been cooking a lot in your creative kitchen, so you got to get us caught up because you've been doing so much in your career, so much. You got so much going on, so many pots cooking on the stove. Let us know what you've been doing so far.
Well, I'd say, pretty much the biggest thing right now is, you know, the White Boy documentary just went on Stars this month. So, that's the biggest thing. That's on Stars. I mean, that's about to go worldwide. You know, after Stars, you know, a lot of international markets are going to pick it up too. So, you know, the White Boy doc is going worldwide. You know, unfortunately, Rick is still in Florida, you know, but actually, you know, we got him out of the license in Michigan, and he actually has an out date. So he'll be out, you know, back in the world by October 2020. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see him in the world. And I was just actually on Tuesday, I was in Detroit. I was at the University of Michigan at a War on Drugs conference. And, you know, I was a keynote speaker. So I kind of talked about my story, the war on drugs, you know, how I got hooked up with Rick. And then we showed the film, you know, to the student body. There are mostly like criminology students and some of the other professors and stuff like that.
That's so awesome. Now, for those of our listeners that don't know your story, just tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your literary journey, because some people don't know.
All right, well, I was basically grew up a military brat in California. My dad was in the Navy. I lived overseas. When he retired, he got a job in Northern Virginia as a working for a defense contractor, you know, and I was like the California kid. I came to Northern Virginia, and, you know, this is like late 80s. Wasn't really any good weed, you know, hardly any LSD around. So I just started getting it shipped, you know, from some of my, you know, homeboys in California. And I was getting weed shipped out there and LSD. And it was like something real small at first when I was like 15 or 16. But then by the time I was like 19 or 20, it turned into this big thing where I was supplying like 15 colleges in 5 states on the East Coast with marijuana and LSD. Eventually, you know, the feds came calling. They indicted me. I didn't want to face the music, you know, so I took off. I was a fugitive for 2 years. I faked my suicide. I was actually top 15 U.S. Marshals list for 2 years. I got caught in 93, and they hit me hard, man. I was 22. I got 25 years as a first-time nonviolent offender. You know, never carried a gun, really never even beat anybody up. You know, it's not like I was this big organized crime figure or anything like that. And I went in, man, and I did the time. I did 21 years from October 1993 to January 2015. While I was in, I started taking college classes first through the Pell Grants, which they still had, like 93, 94. And then when they abolished the Pell Grants for prisoners, luckily I was in a position where my parents were well enough off, you know, that they kind of came back into my life. You know, they had kind of forgiven me by this time, you know, for all the drama and all the stuff I, you know, caused before and all the, you know, torment and stuff I put in their life. So they started paying for correspondence courses. I got an associate's degree from Penn State through correspondence. I got a bachelor's degree from University of Iowa through correspondence, and then I finally got my master's degree from California State University through correspondence. And also at this whole time, I was taking mostly, you know, creative writing, journalism, you know, type of classes like that, because when I was in there, I was just trying to figure out, you know, I was so angry about my sentence. I was like, how did they give me 25 years? Especially, you know, you look at it now with, like, marijuana legalization, you know, sweeping across the nation, and then talking about LSD, you know, for therapeutic value and PTSD and stuff like that, you know, and that's really the same attitudes I had back then, you know. So I always tell people, you know, I never considered myself a criminal, you know, because I didn't go around, like, violating other people. I didn't carry a gun. I didn't rob people. You know, I wasn't a gangster or a criminal or anything like that. I always considered myself, you know, I was an outlaw because I broke laws that I thought were wrong, and I kind of feel justified now. You know, it's just unfortunate, you know, that I had to do all that time. And when I was in there, I was just trying to figure out, you know, a way to reach out and kind of express my anger, express my discontent, and also to shine a light on, you know, what the federal government was doing, you know, with the war on drugs. Because, you know, a lot of people think, oh, people are in prison, they deserve to be in prison. But I can say my whole federal bid, most of the compounds I was on, and I was on 8 different federal prisons in the East Coast, every compound I was on, half the people in there they could have let out. And, you know, I mean, they were just drug dealers making money. I mean, they weren't violent dudes, you know. They weren't, you know, some people deserve in prison. You know, if you're a real violent person, you're continually violent, you know, and violating people and stuff like that, you know, you should go do some time. But, you know, with the war on drugs, they just had a lot of people in there that were just trying to make money. And a lot of people, you know, they were just selling marijuana or LSD or whatever. So, you know, I was just angry. So I started reaching out. That's why I started writing. I first started writing for publications like Don Devin Feds, telling the stories of a lot of the crack era gangsters that I was locked up with. And eventually, like beginning of the 2000s, I started writing for this publication called Vice, which, you know, at that time was just kind of a little punk rock magazine based out of New York. But kind of as they grew and their stature grew into the big media conglomerate they are today, I kind of grew with them. And then, you know, I started publishing books, my Street Legend series. I started my blog, Guerrilla Convict. And I was just sitting in prison. I was writing. I was trying to get not only my story, but these stories, you know, of all the people that I was locked up with. I was trying to get these stories out to the world, you know, so people could kind of see, you know, what was going on. And it's kind of come out a lot now, you know, how, you know, the feds and the government, you know, have been targeting minorities, you know, with systematic corruption and stuff. But, you know, way back then in the 90s, I mean, we were in there. We knew what was going on. You know, we were telling people. So, you know, everything's kind of come full circle, and it's unfortunate that I had to go through all that and all the other people, you know, that are still in there for marijuana, you know, and other, you know, nonviolent crimes are still in there. But at least I feel like in the world there's some type of awareness today, and hopefully we're moving in the right direction, you know, where we can, you know, fix America, man, and make America what it's supposed to be instead of, you know, what it is now.
Mm. Mm. That was amazing.
Yeah, you know, so that's what. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, now there's been a lot of different legislation that's gone to the floor in regards to prison reform. Talk about the process and the direction that it's going in. Do you think that these different legislations are helping? Are they just putting a Band-Aid on it? What are your thoughts?
I mean, they need to do a lot more. I mean, what they're doing, I mean, it's a step, you know, like the First Step Act, you know, in the feds and you know, which is kind of, you know, the First Step Act is kind of going from D.C. and the feds to a lot of the states now. I mean, it's a step in the right direction, but that's all it is. It's a step. So, I mean, there's a mm-hmm. ton of stuff. I mean, really, if you look at it, I mean, people's rights have been, you know, trampled. People's rights have been violated. And, you know, especially minorities. I mean, you know, they've been systematically targeted. I mean, it's still crazy today. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I think I read the other day that it's like still, you know, tens of thousands, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are still getting arrested every day every year for marijuana. And mm-hmm. I just look at it and I'm like, man, when are people going to get a grip? Because it's like, you know, you got Big Pharma and the opioid crisis and all these people making money off the misery of others. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, the big people at the top, they can just do whatever they want and get away with it. But, you know, the little people at the bottom or the lower economic scale, you know, we're just getting crushed, you know, mm-hmm. for their benefit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say it's a start. I know some of the people, you know, involved with the policy stuff. You know, I work with this group called White Collar Advice and Prison Professors with Sean Hopwood and Justin Paperny and Michael Santos, all guys that were in. And, you know, Sean Hopwood, he's a Georgetown lawyer. You know, they profiled his story in 60 Minutes. And, you know, he's been very instrumental working with Jared Kushner and Donald Trump Jr. and Kim Kardashian, you know, for a lot of this prison reform stuff and helping to get people out. But it's just, you know, so many people have just been buried in the system that, you know, that they mm-hmm. need to do. You know, Obama was trying to do it, you know, at the end of his presidency. You know, he was trying to get as many people, you know, out as possible. But, you know, I mean, really, you know, Trump needs to do something. I mean, this is a little step, but, I mean, a lot more needs to be done. I mean, because you still got people, you got nonviolent drug offenders in the federal system doing life, you know, for whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's marijuana, you know, cocaine, methamphetamine. I mean, these are nonviolent people. You know, prison, I think something like prison, I mean, I've been in prison, so I know, you know, some people deserve to be there, you know, for the crimes mm-hmm. they've committed. But, you know, prison should be for repeat, you know, violent offenders, people that don't value life, people that think a gun, they can use a gun to solve problems. That's what prison should be for. Or, you know, people that are, you know, burning stuff, burning churches, you know, or doing hate crimes and stuff like that. But, I mean, we just need to lose this, you know, I call it like the 1980s war on drug mentality. We need to lose it. There's still a lot of people in the world in law enforcement, in politics, in government, they still have this outdated, you know, philosophy, mentality, you know, that war on drugs, you know, from the 80s. And you even see it today. Like, you see all the stuff in the news, like, oh, medical marijuana users can't own guns. I mean, what is that? So, you know, people doing opiates, you know, people that, you know, get drunk every weekend, I mean, they can have guns, but, you know, a couple stoners can't have guns. It's just, I mean, it's ludicrous. I mean, things are changing and there's more awareness, but there's still, you know, a long way to go. And then you look at, you know, like what I specialize in, what I wrote about a lot, you know, like the African-American communities, you know, from the crack era and stuff like that. I mean, these communities were devastated, you know, not by anything they did. They were devastated, you know, by the cocaine that was being pumped in, you know, by Oliver North and the CIA and stuff like that, by the guns that were bringing in the community, you know, and by the laws that were taking all these young men, 17, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, and burying them in the penitentiary. You know, mm-hmm. so then they could go in and gentrify these communities. I mean, it's just such a big scam. And when you're behind the bars, when you're inside the belly of the beast, you see all this, you know, and you just see it, and we talk about it, and we see it. But now the awareness is coming. It's not anywhere. I would say, like, on, you know, a level of 100, you know, percent, like where it should be. I think maybe now we're like at 10-15% awareness. So at least we got the awareness, you know, which is a step in the right direction, but it's still, you know, it's a long way to go, man, because if this is going to be, you know, America, and we're supposed to be land of the free, home of the brave, and we're supposed to be a world leader, you know, we can't tell other countries what to do when we don't even have our own country straight. We need to take care of our own people. You know, a lot needs to be rectified. You know, a lot needs to change. And I believe, you know, a lot of people, you know, like reparations, whatever it's reparations. If it's, you know, if you want to go all the way back to slavery, if you want to go to like the drug war prisoners, you know, and let them benefit from the marijuana business, which right now they basically have all felons barred from the marijuana business. You know, whatever it is, man, people need to look back at history and they need to start doing the right thing so everybody is on an equal footing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can then we can move forward.
Absolutely. And I know that you missed our last Second Chances session that we had, but a lot of them brought up the conspiracy charges, you know, where people can just say they saw you do it or say you did it, and that's what it is. I ain't get it. I don't understand how somebody can say you saw me, but nobody knows if you saw me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you're seeing it right now, you know, with Trump and the Mueller report and all this. So, you know, I mean, if that was just like Joe Blow, you know, from the hood.
Oh, he would be in jail.
You know, yeah, or you know, some dude that doesn't have any money, you know, regardless of race, you know, they're getting a conspiracy charge. But, you know, people on the higher level, on the higher levels and the higher economical, you know, backgrounds or people that have money, it's just like, you know, like they're untouchable. Oh, like you can't prove conspiracy against them. But, you know, other people, I mean, it is ridiculous. You should be guilty for what you're caught for. You know, I do agree. I mean, if you have some Machiavellian, you know, drug lord or, you know, Pablo Escobar, John Gotti type dude, you know, and you need to use a law like that to get them, yeah, that's what those laws were made for. But that's not who they use those laws against. They just use those laws. I mean, you know, I got a continual criminal enterprise charge. I was 20 years old. You know, I was barely out of my teens. You know, I was selling marijuana at 15 colleges in 5 states, maybe making at my height $20,000-$30,000 a month. And I got a continual criminal enterprise charge. That's like a charge for Manuel Noriega, for Pablo Escobar, for John Gotti. And they use that charge on me, and they use that charge on people all across the country all the time. And, you know, when, you know, that's what it is. They make the law for one thing, and I'm not saying sometimes, you know, they make the law for the right thing, but they don't use it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. This is Toni, Seth, and you really opened up a lot of eyes with what you've just shared with us tonight. But I'm going to call it for what it is and just put it out there. You know, you talk about the 10-15% awareness today in our society about the opioid crisis. And I want to know, is it attributed to the different communities, the different neighborhoods now that are so involved and so is touching them in a way that it can't be ignored? You know, when you look in the mirror, you see a different person that's affected by these drugs and things like that. And is that the spike of the awareness and what it would take to bring it all around to 100%? You know, is it going to just continue to be in one certain community that the awareness comes out? Because like you said, back in the day, it was a different people. It was a different community. It was a different part of town that was affected by the drugs, and today it's just totally different.
Oh no, I mean it's totally. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's systematic racism. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got to say it what it is until you recognize something for what it is. I was a 70s kid. I grew up in the 80s, and I remember the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 80s, the big thing was like America was talking about apartheid in South Africa. You know, and they were saying, apartheid, that's so awful. They do the same thing here. So, you know, it's like the pot calling the kettle black, you know.
Exactly.
And like I say, they are, you know, when it comes to, you know, Caucasian or white community, you know, it's going to get more play because really a lot of the media, a lot of the people and journalists that have, you know, traditionally held those positions are mostly white people. You know, I think now things are getting a little more diverse. You know, I'd say especially, you know, since Trump, you know, because now more people, you know, are raising their voices and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, you got to call it for what it is, man. But I think, I mean, slowly but surely, I mean, I think, you know, the whole nation, you know, has to see what's going on. They have to get sick of it because, I mean, you got like these billionaire families that are basically drug dealers, you know, like the Sacklers, you know, like who own, you know, like the OxyContin and Purdue Pharmaceuticals, like these big pharmaceutical companies. And it's crazy because what they were doing, you had lawyers that were working in the DEA. They were DEA lawyers, you know, shaping policy. And then these people, they would quit the DEA because they would get big offers, big money, you know, from these pharmaceutical companies. So then they would quit the DEA, and then they would go work for these pharmaceutical companies. And then, you know, they might work for like 2 or 3 years, and then the pharmaceutical companies are like, hey, we need to change these laws because, you know, they're going to try to bust us. So then you say, Lord, we'll go back to the DEA and work for the DEA again. I mean, it's just, it's crazy, you know, that all, you know, they just like hit all this and, you know, nobody publicized it. No media outlets wrote about it, you know, but now at least, you know, it's being written about. And now we got like these two dynamics in the country, you know. You got like, you know, the people like Trump, you know, on one side, and then, you know, you got other people like Bernie Sanders, you know, and some of the Democrats on the other, and it's, everything is so divided. But I think this division is, you know, what can bring everything together. Because, you know, I mean, you got to be willing to fight, man. You got to be willing to fight for something you stand for. And once you're willing to fight for something that you stand for, you know, that's usually, you know, it's going to be changing. And you've seen over the last couple of years, like here in St. Louis, you know, Ferguson, you know, and other stuff, you know, coming around the country, you know, people are willing to stand up and die for what they believe in. And I believe that's what it takes. You know, that's why this, when this country was founded, the founding fathers, you know, they wanted to get from out from under the yoke of Britain, and they were ready to die for that, you know, and that's why it happened. And that's what we were founded on. So, you know, we're having these moments now. The only thing why it's so hard right now is because the people on one side, you know, like you remember in the 80s, we used to say like the top 10% had all the money, you know, like in the capitalistic Reagan years. But now it's like the top 1%. It's like the ultra rich. It's just like, you know, we're lucky that we got people, you know, like Kanye, you know, Jay-Z, Meek Mill, you know, Kim Kardashian, you know, people, you know, that have wealth and have influence, and they're standing up and they're saying, hey, man, we need to take a look at this. We need to change this. You know, we need to pump money into this, you know, to make stuff right. Because, you know, it's just crazy when 1% of the population controls everything and just walks over everybody else, you know, just, you know, regardless of color, you know, because I'm white dude, but those, I'm not that 1%. They don't represent me. You know, those old white rich guys in Congress, you know, they don't represent me at all. You know, they don't have my interests, you know, even, and I'm a white person. But, you know, definitely I would say the last midterms, you know, Trump, I tell people a lot, you know, I like Trump. I don't like Trump for what he stands for or who he is or nothing like that. I like Trump because Trump is making a lot of people mad. Trump is making a lot of people wake up. And really, it's been since Trump that a lot of this stuff is coming to the surface, you know, the last several years. And the last midterms that we just had, you know, a lot of women ran for Congress and got elected. You know, a lot of minorities did, you know, in traditionally, you know, conservative areas or Republican areas or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of different people are getting involved. And I think as America, our representation needs to represent the people, man. So, I mean, you're always going to have those rich old white dudes in because they represent part of the population. But, you know, they're not supposed to be the majority in the Congress. You know, you have to have people that represent all colors. You have to have people that represent people from all the different, you know, socioeconomic, you know, levels. And, you know, that's what's going to, you know, make America, you know, to take Trump's word, you know, make America great again. But, you know, he's not going to be the one to do it. It's going to be a lot of these people that are coming up now, you know, and as they advance their political careers and new people run, you know, even like I like some like this guy Andrew Yang, who's, you know, kind of throwing his app in, you know, for the presidential, you know, contention, or even Bernie Sanders. I mean, somebody just needs to come up and say, you know, the old way's not working. You know, the old way is trampling on people. And then all these rich people, I mean, you know, I know America. That's why people love America, because it's capitalistic. You know, you can go from nothing to make a lot of money, and people do that. And I respect that. But, you know, when these people, they just get like, you know, almost like monopolies, and it's just crazy, man. That really needs to change. There needs to be a distribution of wealth, you know. More people need to be given opportunities to do stuff than, you know, how it's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, Seth. I'm sorry, Lise. This is Tony.
Okay.
You know, I want to just go back to just a little bit into what you were just explaining about the former DEAs moving from one side to straddling the bridge, if you want to say. But they know the loopholes. They are experts on both sides, whether it be on the DEA side or whether it be on the pharmaceutical side. So they are able to put their stamp on it. You know, they're able to get through the loopholes and make whatever it is that they're trying to make an issue. And a lot of times that those that have the biggest voice are the ones that know the loopholes within certain things, and the little guy is left to the side, and you don't hear as much. Their voice isn't as loud. So whereas one side is talking about the opioid crisis because it's affecting their community, on the other side you have hundreds of thousands that it was affected just for the sake of it yesterday, and they didn't have a voice. So now this whole booming voice is talking about, oh, it's a crisis. We got to make this legal. We got to make that legal. Whereas when it affected people that look like me, it wasn't an issue. And I have an issue with that.
Oh, no. I mean, you should. I have an issue with it, too. Because I think when we elect people, you know, our representatives, right now, I mean, really, our country is just like prison. Like, look, in prison...
Mm-hmm.
Whatever job
mm-hmm.
you have, it's just like the street. Everything is a hustle. Your job is a hustle. Your position is a hustle. You know, anything you do is a hustle. And that's what we have right now. And, I mean, that's the dark underbelly of capitalism, which is kind of ruling right now. I mean, capitalism
mm-hmm.
can work, you know, right. But when it's, you know, when it's just being manipulated, I mean, you see it even like with this admission scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, I dropped my phone.
Perfect example, the admission scandal.
Yeah, like, you know, all those people, you know, they were using their wealth, and the people that they were paying were using their jobs as hustlers.
Right.
And that's a perfect example. That's what our politicians do now. You know, that's what our politicians
mm-hmm.
have been doing since, you know, forever. And, you know, that's what's wrong. We need the best and the brightest to be politicians, and they need to be compensated so that they don't have to, you know, cater to lobbying groups that are giving their money. You know, it's like you look at the presidents, right? Like I'm going to
mm-hmm.
use Bill Clinton as a perfect example. And, you know, I'm not like pro Democrat or pro Republican or whatever. I'd say I'm more, you know, like a libertarian type of guy, but you know, I like some conservative stuff and I like some liberal stuff. So I'm kind of middle of the road, but I'm going to give you a perfect example. Like when Bill Clinton first came up, you know, I mean, he was governor of Arkansas and all that stuff, and he had some money, but, you know, he would get money, mostly donations and whatever. But now it's like the Clintons are, I mean, they're rich. They don't want for anything. So he used the presidency to get money, you know, and you know, for anybody inside, you know, I know Bill Clinton too. You know, when Bill Clinton got elected, there was maybe like 50 federal prisons, you know. By the time he got out, there was like 150 federal prisons. So, I mean, that tells you right there. But, you know, we need people in politics who, you know, aren't going to take the money. But, you know, I mean, it's hard. I mean, everybody wants money. Money makes life easier. You know, people are going to take opportunities. You know, but the way the system is set up right now, you know, the people are taking opportunities, you know, and making money, and they don't even care about anybody. You got to have people. You know, we need representatives that care about people, you know, that are going to be bigger than everybody else. And I think that's a problem, because it's just hard, because, you know, at the at the core, most human beings, you know, are creatures of convenience, and we just want our life to be easy, and money makes our life easier. So, you know, not to say, you know, that I can blame them. Anybody can get in the position, that position might do the same thing. But that's one of the big things, you know, that needs to be looked at, and, you know, why there needs to be term limits, why there doesn't need to be, you know, career politicians, and why there needs to be equal representation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I want to go back a little bit, because you talked about and just kind of switch, because you got so much going on and we only got you for a brief amount of time. I want to go back to what you said about the documentary Going to Stars and it being picked up globally. Talk a little bit about how that works.
Well, basically, we licensed Stars didn't buy it. We licensed it. You know, they do like licensing deals, you know, so they get it for, they pay a certain amount of money and they get it for a certain amount of time. But then, you know, once you get on a network like Stars, I mean, or Netflix or Hulu or something like that, it raises, you know, the visibility, because, you know, everything is content now. There's so many streaming services. So then if you got something and it does well on one of these streaming services, you know, then all international, you know, like all over Europe, you know, all over, you know, China, you know, Australia, all just all the different markets, you know, where people are getting content, you know, they're looking at that. Because, I mean, so whatever you want to say about America, you know, and all our numerous faults and all the things that are wrong with this country, I think still when it comes to entertainment, I mean, we're still top of the line. I mean, you can just see that, you know, with all the hip-hop artists who pretty much, you know, dominate, you know, national and international music these days. They're like the most recognizable, you know, biggest celebrities, and everybody loves their music. So, Stars is just, I mean, that's a huge platform, man. You know, Netflix, these streaming networks, and when something does well here, and that just, you know, takes it international, because all the little streaming networks, or, you know, Stars Europe, or, you know, Stars China, or Stars whatever, they all want this content, you know, so that's how I see it kind of spreading. So since we've been on Stars, we've been getting a lot of interest now, so I think that's going to you know, lead to a lot more licensing deals for different streaming networks all over the world.
All right, I love it. Now,
yeah, I didn't intend to come on here and be so political, but I don't know. Just sometimes I'll just be reading the news and I just see all the stuff, and it just makes me so angry. Especially, you know, I'm a marijuana guy. I've been a marijuana guy my whole life. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll be like a 24/7 stoner. You know, not all the time. I take breaks sometimes depending on what I got going on in life or what project, you know. But, you know, it makes me so mad when I just see, you know, I see like people being prosecuted for marijuana. You know, I just get so angry. You know, it's like, why are you prosecuting, you know, I mean, I drink, you know, but I'm not, you know, I'm the type of dude, I might have one or two drinks. You know, I'm a social drinker, you know, really I don't even drink that much, but it's just crazy, man, that makes me so angry when you see it. And then the prison, it makes me so angry. You know, I got friends that are in prison, you know, life, doing life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and these
platform,
are like non-violent
use it.
Guys. Yeah, they've been in prison.
It.
Yeah, these guys have been in prison for, like, you know, they're middle-aged men now, you know, 50. Like, even, like White Boy Rick. Why is White Boy Rick still in prison? You know, but I got other friends that got life sentences in the feds. And, you know, I'm just like, man, it just makes me so angry. You know, so sometimes you guys just caught me in one of those moments where I got real political. I usually don't do that.
Well, why are you political? I got a question then. Because, you know, El Chapo's been in the news a lot. But he is not the only cartel boss that is here in a United States prison. My question is, why are they here?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the U.S. government feels like, you know, their country can't do anything about it. So, you know, they want to step in and be big brother, you know. But I don't know, what, you know, with the cartels, I mean, I think, like, those laws, like the CCE and stuff, I mean, that was made for big cartels. I mean, you could say, you know, I've read a lot of stuff. Some people say, oh, Chapo just took the fall. You know, it's really the government people in Mexico. So I don't know. That's just like a hard thing because it's like the U.S. for diplomatic relations. I mean, they got to have somebody to talk to over there. So they talk to the government people. And even if the government people are criminal, you know, and even if our government people are criminal. So, I mean, but I think that's all, you know, that's all caused by the drug war. I mean, people in the United States are going to take drugs, you know, regardless of where they get it from. You know, people throughout history have escaped, you know, used, you know, different types of drugs for escapism. I mean, that's just a part of humanity. So to criminalize that, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I believe, I mean, I'll be the first to say, I mean, if you're going around killing people and doing stuff like that to protect your business or whatever, I mean, maybe you should be in prison, you know, because, you know, human life is valuable. You know, people shouldn't just go around and kill people, you know, but, you know, taking drugs, you should be, if you want to take drugs, you know, you should be allowed to take drugs. I mean, you can go and buy alcohol, you can go and buy cigarettes, you know what, marijuana is the same. I mean, even I'm not into heroin, I'm not into cocaine, or I'm not into methamphetamine or some of that stuff. But, you know, if that's what people want to do, I mean, it should be regulated somehow, you know, and maybe people, you know, like El Chapo. You know, I don't really see any difference between, like, some big pharmaceutical CEO and El Chapo. I mean, really, they're the same. I mean,
right.
Maybe El Chapo runs his business more violent, so that's why, you know, they go and get him and bring him over here. But also, a figurehead like El Chapo is, you know, he's a fall guy, you know, because, I mean, obviously, as long as he was doing stuff, and as long as he had, you know, shit on Smash, or stuff on Smash, excuse me, whatever you say, I mean, obviously he was working with people in the government in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody that's involved, you know, we've even seen in this country, like you guys got guys like Whitey Bulger or whoever, guys that have been, you know, criminal empires or criminal, you know, overlords for a long time. They're working in conjunction with law enforcement. You know, it's two sides of the same coin. They're just on different sides. But, you know, basically, you know, a lot of them, you know, are basically the same people. I've met, since I've been out, like, for, you know, the white boy, I interviewed a couple different FBI guys for that. And, you know, I went and hung out with them, and I talked to them, and really, they're just like criminals, except they're just, you know, they're kind of, you know, they jump out there, they do crazy stuff, they take risks. You know, it's the same kind of mindset. It's just opposite sides of the coin, you know? So, I mean, that's like a really good question. Like, why, you know, are some people, just because they're on the right side of the law, are not prosecuted, and then people, you know, on the wrong side of the law, you know, are prosecuted? I mean,
mm-hmm.
If we can figure that out,
yeah.
If we can
That's
figure
right.
that out, you know, maybe we can move forward. But I do believe, I believe that, you know, I believe all drugs should be legalized. I mean, that's my personal opinion. You know, a lot of people might not.
That's a long way coming.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, marijuana is halfway legalized. If you think about it, if you go all the way back, liquor wasn't legalized when it first, you know, back in the day, it was illegal. And then all of a sudden, they decided to, the best way to control bootlegging was to put some money on it and get into it. So, I mean,
yep.
And then same thing now with marijuana. So who knows what they have plans for. But they're going to
mm-hmm.
have to do something because what they're doing now is not working. But I guess maybe
Definitely.
Now it's just shifted to other things where they figure, okay, well, let's get control this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's too much terrible stuff happening, you know. I mean, you got pedophiles out here. You got, you know, sex trafficking,
mm-hmm.
human trafficking. I mean, they're
mm-hmm.
stealing kids and taking people for body parts, you know. I mean, it's crazy all the stuff that's going on. And a lot of that stuff really flies under the radar, you know, because they
mm-hmm.
want to make such a big deal, you know, about drugs and stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of awful stuff happens in the world. And I think, you know, law enforcement, both nationally and internationally, needs to worry more about that and stop, you know, worrying about, you know, people. Because some drug dealers or drug organizations can be violent, you know, I mean, that's a given. But the majority, you know, they're just people trying to make money. They're just, you know, dealing in like illegal contraband and instead of
it's
something
a business,
legal.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, they're just business people. So I mean, it's crazy that, you know, this person can sell oxys and people can sell marijuana and you get 20 years for selling marijuana, and for oxys you just gotta pay a fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't
true.
Make sense.
In the scheme of things,
you know,
it does.
I mean, who knows? I mean, it's never going to be a perfect world, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just find lately, man, I just get, you know, I get so sick of this stuff. Even, like, I'll go on Twitter sometimes and I see some articles and I just go on rants. And, you know, some people may probably think I'm crazy or whatever, but I'm just like, you know, being in prison for so long, you know, you kind of got to, you know, conform and you know, you can't say what you want, you know, because you'll end up in the hole or you'll end up in this. And I'm 48 years old. I'm almost 50 years old. So I'm like, I'm just going to say what I want. You know, if you don't like it, you know, keep walking. You know, if they do like it or support what I say, you know, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just getting to the point now where I'm just going to say what I want to say and I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, if they want to lock me up or if they want to kill me or, you know, whatever they want to do, you know, bring it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, but I'm still going to do my creative stuff no matter what, because that's like my passion, you know, writing. And I'm moving into more film stuff. So, you know, I can kind of, like with White Boy, I think we really showed, you know, what's really going on. And I got some other stuff in the works now that, you know, I'm trying to entertain people, but I'm trying to educate them at the same time. And then, like, with some more of my narrative work, you know, and features that I want to do, you know, I want to entertain, but I want to get a message across, and I want to show how things are, and, you know, just expose stuff for what it is.
Absolutely. Mm. Now, have you ever thought about running for office yourself?
No, I don't know, man. You know.
Why?
I just think politics is so corrupt, man. It's, you know, I don't know, you know, because, I mean, it's like anything, you know. I mean, because you can have someone who's real pure and has really good beliefs, and then, you know, they get in the system, they get in the political machinery, you know, or like they call D.C. the swamp, and, you know, and you got all these, you know, shiesty, slimy people and come and offer you this hard money. I mean, I'll be the first to say, I mean, people are human, you know, sometimes. You know, it takes a real strong person, you know, to not take, you know, if someone offers you, you know, a certain amount of money or whatever to vote this way or to support this or support that. I mean, it takes a real strong person not to take that money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wouldn't even want to put myself in that position because, you know, I could stand for all this and then people start giving me money and then I could become the same as what I hate.
Exactly.
But then the cycle isn't broken. You know, the cycle isn't broken because not enough good-hearted people are going into service to clean out the swamp. The swamp is just going to continue to be a big, dirty swamp.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wish I had the answers. I mean, that's a problem. You know, I think, you know, if we just get, you know, I think the last midterms was a step in the right direction. But, you know, we need to keep that. We need younger people. We, you know, we definitely need more women. Definitely need more people of color. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need to change the makeup of the government. But, you know, who's to say? I mean, they could all end up in the same position, you know, when the money starts floating around. But, you know, hopefully,
yeah.
I mean, that's all you can have in hope. That's all you can have is hope, man. If you don't have hope, I mean, you don't have nothing. So, I mean, you know, we can hope and, you know, maybe people will come along. And even, you know, I liked Obama, man. I thought Obama was big for our country, you know, because he was the first African-American, you know, president. And, you know, I know they want to say something about the Democrats and, you know, they're a crime family. And I do believe the Clintons were kind of like a crime family. And, you know, but I think Obama did a good job for our country. I would really like to see a woman be elected president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, it definitely somebody smoother. You know, Obama was smooth. You know, Trump is not smooth. Basically, you know, Obama represented our country good. Trump just kind of is like the ugly American, you know. So I know all the businessmen love Trump, you know, because he helps them make more money. And, you know, I guess for the economy, he's been good, you know, in some ways. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, we're going to have to look back at Trump in hindsight, you know, 10, 20 years from now to really judge, you know, because there's just so much, you know, hyperbole and stuff in the media. And even, like, I write for Vice, man, and when I started writing for Vice, because we were doing all raw stuff, but even Vice is, like, you know, so left now. You know, everything, you know, it's like this big division, like the left and the right. And we just need to, as a country and our representatives, everybody, you know, needs to be more centered. I felt like Obama was, you know, like more in the center, you know, would kind of bring everybody together instead of like this crazy division that we have now, you know, in politics and in the country, which I don't think, you know, I don't think that's going to lead to anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, you know, we can have hope and, you know, maybe, you know, somewhere, someplace, you know, there's somebody that's, you know, ready to step up. I mean, I don't know. I'm almost 50, man. I'm tired. That's a younger man's game. You know, I'm just trying to, I want to make some cool stuff, you know, that people like and people want to watch, you know, and entertain
mm-hmm.
people with, you know, getting my message across. And, you know, I just want to make enough money so my wife can quit her job and, you know, because she took care of me my whole bit, you know, stayed with me all that time. So I just want to, you know, give her a nice life. And, you know, I want nice stuff and whatever, but, you know, I don't need to have, you know, like AOC said, like, you know, why would anybody need more than $10 million a year? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Why would anybody,
when I
like,
get there, I'll let
you
know.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just crazy. It's like, you know, it's taking it to the stream, you know? I mean, you know, but I don't know. It's like anything. You know, it's like levels, too. You know, just like Meek Mills talks about, you know, he has that song, Levels. You know, it's like you get to one level and you want to go to the next level. So, I don't know, man. I'm just struggling. You know, a lot of times, you know, from the outside, people look in and they say, oh, you're doing great. You're doing great. But, I mean, really, I feel like I'm struggling like everybody else. You know, I'm hand to mouth. I'm month to month. It's not like I'm liquid or I got a lot of money in the bank, which I think, you know, everybody is pretty much like that. You know, it's only that top 1% that has a lot of, you know, even like we see big celebrities or, you know, athletes and they make all this money, but, you know, they're still living hand to mouth. They're just, you know, because they're spending a lot more money, you know, so it's
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing, you know, so, you know, I'm struggling. I mean, life is a struggle, so I'm going to keep struggling and, try to do the things I want to do and make a difference, you know, and
mm-hmm.
at the same time, you know, create different stuff and, you know, have stuff that, you know, that's what I get value out of. I get value out of when people read my books, you know, and they like and they say, hey, man, that was good. Or if, like, you know, people watch the documentary, you know, when people,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything I do artistically, you know, that people enjoy, that's what
mm-hmm.
I get value from. You know, I like crave that recognition. You know, so that's kind of like what drives me. You know, it's not even, you know, I mean, money's nice because money gives you more opportunities to do more stuff, you know. So, you know, money's always nice. But really, for me, it's more the it's the recognition, you know. It's the, you know, I got a big ambition, you know, for people
mm-hmm.
to like what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all in that,
you know,
same boat. You're not alone.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do entertainment stuff, you know.
That, mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we like. We just, you know, we want to be heard. We want to be recognized. You know, we want to be validated. You know, I think
right.
as a human, I think as a race, we all, you know, that's what we want. You know,
mm-hmm.
so this is my way to do it and, you know, a lot of other people's. But, you know, it's never going to be a perfect world, man. We can just, you know, try to be nice to the next person and try to be humble and be grateful, you know, and, you know, give people respect.
That's it. Respect.
Absolutely. Now,
mm-hmm.
what's next? I know you said you're heading into more of movies and the big screen, but what's next? What's next for your brand? What's next for Gorillaz Convict? What do you have next that we can look forward to?
Well, I've been working on this documentary about North St. Louis for about like 2.5 years now, so we're in post-production right now. We're editing it. And what it's about, there's this reverend here named the Reverend Kim McCoy. And you know, he's like a big dude. He has dreadlocks, you know. He has a denomination in North St. Louis, but, you know, he goes out and he walks the streets, you know, and he doesn't walk the street like during the day, you know, when it's light out. He goes out and he walks the streets on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., you know, and he goes out there. He's basically a violence, you know, interrupter, which, you know, we've had, you know, in a lot of different cities across the nation, you know, people have been doing work like this, and he's kind of, you know, one of the main ones doing it here in St. Louis. So we filmed him. We filmed him for 2 years, man. We went out and we followed him. We took cameras. We walked around North St. Louis. You know, we heard gunshots. You know, people fired guns around us. You know, we saw people, you know, people that we saw, you know, one weekend, maybe the next weekend they weren't around because they got killed or they OD'd, you know. And he just goes out in the streets, you know. And his main thing is, you know, he says it. He says I do this, you know, because I love black people. You know, he says these are my people. I love black people. He says I'm sick of the young men killing each other. He said, you know, he's trying to get people off drugs. You know, he's trying to get people places to live, like the homeless. You know, when he goes out, they give sandwiches. You know, they bring blankets. You know, just all this little stuff. But, you know, his main thing is he calls what he does a ministry of presence. You know, he just goes in the street. You know, he meets the people in the different areas. And if he can help, you know, if there's some situation that might turn violent, you know, he actually, you know, he steps in the way. He's like the type of dude, you know, he would step in the way of a bullet if someone was trying to kill somebody else. You know, that's just the type of dude he is. So I'm making this film about him. You know, he's my hero, you know, for the film. But at the same time, what he's doing and what's happening here in St. Louis, you know, it's a microcosm of what's happening, you know, all across the nation. And this is just, you know, what he's doing to change things. So that's the story I'm trying to tell in this. It's going to be a feature doc. So, you know, we're in the editing process right now, so I'm hoping to get that done, you know, this year, and then, you know, get into some film festivals in 2020 and kind of highlight, because really what he's doing, it kind of stemmed out of Ferguson, you know, because he was at Ferguson, you know, and he was down there involved, and then, you know, he got together with some other like-minded people, you know, like some college professors from Harris Stowe and other concerned citizens and, you know, people that work with homeless people and people that work with addiction and people that work in gang prevention, you know, and he formed this thing. It's called Nightlife. So that's what the documentary is going to be called. It's going to be called Nightlife, Walking St. Louis's Most Dangerous Streets. And, you know, for a lot of people that don't know, you know, St. Louis is ranked in the top five, you know, for murder capital of the year, you know, the last, you know, since Ferguson. You know, so it's really, it's a story about one man and what he's willing to do and how he's putting his life on the line, you know, for his people, because he has love for his people. And you know, I've been following him, and I got the ultimate respect for this guy, because, you know, he just doesn't talk the talk. You know, he walks the walk. You know, he's just not there, you know, for the camera moment or, you know, to get in the news and stuff like that. He goes out there if there's cameras. He goes out there if there's 75 people walking with him. He goes out there if it's just him. You know, I've been out there with cameras where it's been like him and one other person. You know, I've been out there with cameras where it's been like, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, church community people, you know, like 70 or 80 people. So, you know, I just think it's amazing what he's doing. And that's kind of like the story that I've been documenting. And that's, I'm trying to pull that documentary together and get it finished, so that I can get it out there and, you know, show the world, you know, what's happening in St. Louis. But, you know, I think what's happening in North St. Louis is representative of, you know, what's happening all across the nation.
That sounds powerful.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, one of those, it's going to be like, you know, kind of a call to action, you know, type of issue film. You know, we're going to show all the different issues, but also, you know, we're going to tell his story, you know, and why he does what he does, you know, and the different, you know, challenges and obstacles that he's faced in his life, you know, that led him to the decision, you know, to do this. And this dude's phenomenal. It doesn't matter, you know, if it's snowing, if it's icy, if it's cold, if it's raining. I mean, he goes out, you know, like clockwork, you know, and like I said, He's not going out there during the day. He's going out from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. to all the hot spots. You know, he's hitting the worst areas, you know, on the other side of Del Mar in North St. Louis. You know, and and you know, I'm just, you know, I even feel honored and lucky, you know, that he would even, you know, let me go out with him, you know, and vouch for me, you know, so that the people would even, you know, these communities would even let me go out here with cameras. You know, because a lot of times, you know, in the hood, if you see a white guy with cameras, they're going to think it's cops. So you know how that can go. But, you know, he put his word out there. When I approached him to do all this, he put his word out, you know, let all the people in the communities where he walks know what we were going to do, you know, and that we were coming out. And, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with the different people, and I've even recorded them, you know, and let them, you know, talk about what they think is wrong or how they ended up, you know, homeless or on drugs or where they ended up. So it's just a way to show, man, I want to show, because people can always say, you know, like, oh, he's this, he's that. People, you know, humans like to stereotype other humans. Society likes to stereotype. But, man, I don't care if you're white, black, Mexican, or whatever. If you take the time to talk to another human being, they're people just like you are. I mean, they just might be some other, you know, they had unfortunate circumstances, you know, in their life, or, you know, just because of what color they're from or where they're from, they didn't have the same opportunity. So that's what I'm just trying to shine a light and say, look, these people are human. I don't care if you're a drug addict. I don't care if you're homeless. I don't care if you're a gangbanger, you know, ex-con, whatever. I'm just trying to show, you know, just like the same I was trying to do with my Street Legends series. You know, I'm just trying to show, I mean, these people are human, man, and they just find themselves in circumstances beyond their control. And, you know, so that's what I'm trying to show. And I'm trying to, you know, he's my hero figure, you know, because I'm like, man, how does this dude do this? He just keeps doing it, you know. And I'm like, man, I'd be tired of doing that all the time. But, you know, he doesn't give up. We've been out, we filmed him where even guys were saying, like, out there, like, why do you keep doing this, man? You're not doing no good. And he's like, man, he goes, this is what I want to do. He's like, I love my people. I'm trying to make a difference. So that's what we're gonna highlight in this film. You know, it's kind of like, you know, one man's crusade to you know, turn a whole area around, or at least do what he can. You know, and you know, he has his little successes. You know, where he gets, you know, he'll get fine people, you know, housing, or he'll get people in rehab, or like I said, he'll stop. People getting killed. And, you know, that's just amazing that I think that, you know, he takes that all upon himself. And that's why I've been documenting his story. And yeah, hopefully I can get it in a big film festival next year, so, you know, a lot of people can see and see what's been happening in North St. Louis, you know, to raise awareness.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Now, can you talk a little bit about that? Because there's a lot of authors that are taking their books to film, and they're taking it to Netflix and different avenues like that. Can you just talk a little bit about how to get your project into a film festival?
Oh, well, I use this, you know, they have this thing, it's called Film Freeway. You know, it basically, you know, they have a lot of the film festivals, and you kind of go on, you can make a project, and you can upload, you know, your short film or your documentary or whatever. And then, you know, you got to pay entry fees. You know, some are more expensive, some are less. But, you know, they can range anywhere, entry fees from $10 to $50 or $60. But what I found, what you have to do too, because I didn't go into a lot of these film festivals. I mean, it's like anything, you know, in this country or in the world. You know, it's about connections and networking too. So, you know, like, not only do you want to, you know, use these things like Film Freeway, you know, to enter them, but then, you know, you want to go to these places because you want to meet people, because it's like, all right, if I don't know you and you're asking me, you're submitting some film or whatever, I've never met you, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe I'll disregard your film, or, you know, sometimes some of these film festivals, like a big one like Sundance or something, they get so many entries, they don't even look at them. There's no way they can look at them, you know. They don't have, you know, enough people or enough man hours. So, you know, when I'm doing this stuff, I'm entering these films and I'm submitting them, but I'm also going to these film festivals and I'm networking with people and I'm trying to meet these people, you know, the people that run these different film festivals or the people that are on the film collection, the film selection committee. And I'm going to them and I'm telling them about, you know, and I'm meeting them and I'm talking to them. Because, you know, if people like you, if they take a liking to you, you know, or they see some sort of passion from you, you know, or they like you, you know, then a lot of times, you know, they're going to give, you know, more credence to your film. They might actually take the time, you know, to watch it and see if it's something that they would want to have in their film festival. So, I mean, this is something I've been learning, you know, since I've been out. I've got a few things in film festivals, but, you know, like I went to Sundance in January for the second time. I'm actually going to Cannes in France coming up in May. So, you know, I've been meeting different people, and I kind of got this circle of people that I've met, you know, going to these film festivals, you know, that they're, you know, not people that are famous or celebrities or people that already made it, but people like me, you know, they're struggling, that are trying to make it, and, you know, we kind of like pull our reefers, oh, do you know somebody at this film festival? You know, I'm submitting to here, and, you know, that's it. Oh, yeah, I know this guy. You know, and then they reach out to him on behalf of you. So, I mean, it's like anything in life, man. It's about networking, you know, being persistent, you know, believing in what you do. But also, you know, at the end of the day, especially, you know, like with film or writing or anything, it's about you got to have a good product, man. You got to have – I can't stress that enough. You have to put, you know, the time and effort to make sure your product, whatever it is the best that it can be, you know, because that's gonna make you stick out, man. You know, you got to put a lot of effort. You know, you got to do all the preparation. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Some people can just go out and take a camera out and shoot something, and it can become a phenomenon. I mean, look at like stuff like the Blair Witch Project or something like that. You know, but I mean, more often than not, I mean, stuff like that doesn't happen. I mean, how many projects are there that are, you know, people wanted to be the next Blair Witch Project, but, you know, it never happened. You know, so, you know, I've learned, man, you gotta do your homework, man. You gotta do the preparation, especially with film. You gotta find the right people. I mean, it's collaborative, so you gotta form the right team around you. You know, you gotta have people that not only have a passion for what they do, but you got to have people that know what they're doing, that have the technical skills. I mean, I was in prison 21 years, so I'll be the first to admit, you know, I don't have the technical skills, you know, but I've read enough and I've been around on film sets and with the technical people enough that I know the basics, you know, when they're talking, you know, if they get too deep into stuff, you know, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, sometimes they're going to be talking about aperture this and, you know, all that. And I might be kind of lost, but, you know, it's more about recognizing, you know, good film, identifying, you know, good acting, identifying good subject matter. And the easiest way to do that is, I mean, you just, like, there's certain films I like that I think are good. You know, there's certain films that the society thinks or pop culture thinks is good. So what I do is I study the films I like. You know, I study the docuseries I like. You know, I see how they're filmed. I see how they put together. And then, you know, I kind of use, you know, I try to make the stuff that I do look like that, even though it's the story that I'm telling. You know, mm-hmm. but it's not easy, man. It's real competitive. I mean, I'll be honest. I thought I was going to come out and boom, like 2 years, I was going to be on. You know, and now I'm going on 5 years and, you know, I'm still trying to claw my way, you know, to get in position. You know, it's very competitive. There's a lot of people out there trying to do film and entertainment stuff. I mean, the only thing that's good is it seems like there's more streaming networks, you know, coming online, and it seems like, you know, America's and the world's appetite for content is, you know, never ending. So, you know, that's a good thing. But, you know, I learn every day, man. I'm still learning, you know, something. Like, I shot the Easter Bunny Assassin straight out of prison, you know, summer 2015. And if I redid that today, I mean, I would change a lot of things, you know, because I've learned a lot, you know, since then. You know, that was just like kind of guerrilla-style filmmaking, you know. And, you know, luckily, you know, I got that first thing I did. I the first film festival I entered it in, you know, it got in, you know. But that was, you know, probably just – I mean, you know, I don't want to say luck, you know, because we worked hard on it, but, you know, I think luck has a lot to do with it too. You know, it's about hard work, preparation, you know, knowing what you're doing, and you need a little bit of luck.
I'm one of those that loved crime theme shows.
Yeah, but I learned too. You know, I did White Boy with Sean Reck. I mean, he won 9 Emmys, and he kind of trained me. You know, when I did White Boy with him, you know, he kind of took me under his wing, you know, and trained me, you know, how to do the documentaries. And now, you know, I was on Escape at Diana Moore. You know, I was on that set because one of my friends was a consultant, you know, and I was background and I was a stand-in, you know, for one of the actors, and for a week. And, you know, really I wanted to be on that set, you know, because that was a big Showtime, you know, production, you know, with Ben Stiller and Benicio Del Toro, you know, Patricia Arquette. And I went to that set, you know, really not even to do background or whatever. I mean, they pay you a daily rate and stuff like that, so that's cool. But really I went on that set to study. That was like a class for me, you know, just watching – you know, Ben Stiller direct Benicio Del Toro or Paul Dano or Patricia Arquette, you know, watching how Ben Stiller, you know, interacted with all the other people on his crew, you know, watching how the, you know, professional actors, you know, were doing stuff. So, you know, I try to do as much stuff like that as possible, you know, because you can't always be the head guy. You can't always run everything all the time. Sometimes, you know, you got to be humble and you got to go in his background if you just want to get the experience and you want to see how they do stuff on a big set. So I was on that set for 3 weeks, you know, and just as a background prisoner. And, you know, but I learned a lot, you know, just watching, with my eyes open.
It's funny you should say that because my son was on that show as well. He was one of the prisoners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There was a lot, man. We had like 350. There was like 350, you know, background guys. So, you know, I learned a lot, man, and that's why I continue to do stuff, you know, just to learn, you know, and talk to different people and, you know, work with different people. You know, I don't take every opportunity. A lot of people around here, especially St. Louis, a lot of people ask me to do a lot of different stuff. But, you know, I just don't jump out at anything. I only work on something, you know, if I think the people have a chance to go somewhere or if I think the project's, you know, real viable. You know, so you got to pick and choose. You know, you got to pick and choose your projects too. You can't just say like, oh, I want to be an actor, I want to be this, or I want to be that, and then jump at anything that comes your way. You know, because some people don't put in the preparation. You know, some people don't have the right team, and you know, a lot of times if they don't, then the product is not, you know, it's going to turn out, you know, not very good.
Absolutely,
that's true.
You know, we always appreciate when you come and kick it with us here in the chat room. We want you to shout out
right.
All of your social media. When we can get Right White Boy on Stars, y'all make sure y'all subscribe to Stars. Don't even play. Go subscribe to Stars so y'all can watch that White Boy when it come out. But make sure y'all let us know.
Yeah, it's out. Yeah, it's out now.
It's out now?
You can watch it. It came out. Yeah, it came out April 1st on Stars, or April 9th. Been on since April 9th.
I haven't seen it. Okay, I have Stars. I'm going to go search
it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's on. And, yeah, you know, you can find me. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, under my name, Seth Ferrante, SETHFERRANTI. You know, my main website that I built from prison that sells all my Street Legends books and prison stories is GorillaConvict.com. You know, I also got SethFerrante.com. All my stuff's on Amazon. You can find all my stuff on Amazon. All my stuff's on iTunes. You know, I got some audio books now too on audio, on the Audible. You know, the Amazon audio book thing. I got comic books on Comicology. You know, I got a lot of stuff out there, and I'm constantly working. I'm constantly writing. You know, I do stuff for Vice all the time. You know, I do stuff for Penthouse. You know, I do stuff for a lot of different websites. So, and I'm in discussions for a lot of stuff. You know, I haven't landed every deal I wanted, or, you know, I haven't capitalized on every opportunity, you know, that's been brought to my way. But, you know, I've been having a lot of discussions. There's been a lot of interest, you know, in my different projects and what I'm doing. So I'm just going to keep moving forward, man, and stay positive. And it's all about finding, man. You got to find the right people, the people that believe in you, You know, you got to find the right people, you know, that like your idea. You got to find the people that you vibe with, because, I mean, that's a basic human concept, too. You're just not going to vibe with everybody. Everybody's not going to like you. So, you know, if someone doesn't like you, you know, you can't, you know, give up or you can't take offense. You just got to keep it moving. And, you know, I always tell people, right, there's somebody that thinks like me, that works like me, you know, that likes the stuff that I like, you know, on a higher level, you know, of the rung or the ladder that I'm on, doing what I'm doing, and they're looking for somebody like me. You know, it's just getting out there, networking, jumping out there, you know, until you find that person, you know, and then when you find that person, they're going to give you a hand up. You know, that's what happened. That's why I made White Boy with Sean Reck. You know, I went and I met Sean Reck, and, you know, we vibed, you know, we gelled, you know, so he gave me a hand up, you know, and he helped me, you know, and he taught me how to make documentary films. So, I mean, it's the same thing. So that's right now, really. I'm looking for somebody like that, you know, that's going to, you know, take me and show me, you know, how to shoot a feature or you know, kind of guide me or oversee me as I shoot a feature, you know, because that's what I want my next step to be. You know, I want to do a docu series or I want to do a feature film.
That's awesome.
I love
you,
it.
You stay busy,
Rhett.
You stay busy.
Absolutely. Love it.
I'm very determined and I'm very ambitious, and I don't take no for an answer.
There's nothing wrong with that. You better talk that talk.
Yeah. Look, if you don't speak up for yourself, no one else is going to speak up for you.
Absolutely.
Right.
I definitely agree with that. Seth, we so appreciate you coming to kick it with us today. We can't wait to have you back on the show in 2020 because we know your 2019 gets filled up fast. But we always, always, always appreciate when you come through. Make sure you tag us in any of your posts, the things that you have going on, so we can get those things shared out for you.
All right.
Absolutely.
No, thanks for having me on the show. And like I say, you know, both you and Miss Tony you guys have been supporting me for a long time since I was in, and you know, I really appreciate that, man. I mean, that's big to me, you know. So I always got love for you guys, and I always got love for your show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so very much, and send our love to Diane. We appreciate her and all that she does, and we will talk to you soon.
Yep. Yeah, she's waiting for me to get off because she wants to watch Game of Thrones.
Absolutely.
We didn't catch it Sunday. We're going to watch it right now.
Oh,
we're going to go watch Game of Thrones
right
now.
Tell her get ready. It's going down. So tell her turn her phone off.
Right.
Put it on Do Not Disturb because it's going down.
Yeah, we're about to watch
episode
one. We're going to watch episode one. All right, thank you.
Not a problem. We appreciate you. Take care.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Wow, he shared a lot with us, Leash, and it was just eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I appreciate him coming to kick it with us. Anytime I call on him, it's always available, and we so thank him for that. We appreciate you guys coming to kick it with us today in the chat room. If you're just tuning in, hey, y'all, hey, we just want to take a moment and shout out to those that listen to the replay. Our replay is popping. Thank y'all so much who have been tuning in to our replay here on Blog Talk or on iTunes or Spotify. We appreciate you guys. We thank you guys for your support. Make sure y'all come back. We don't have a show tomorrow. We will be seeing you guys in Detroit. We will be at the Hustle and Grind May 18th.
Can't wait.
Detroit. Yes. So if you are in the Detroit area, come and holler at your girls. We're going to be there at the Hustle and Grind with the fabulous Michelle Moore, Hood Books. We will see y'all. It's going down. So I'm excited about all the things that's going to be happening in literature this year. We appreciate you guys, and good night.
Good night.